Now, a blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Letters etched into the sign read, Turner. Now, a logo of a thick-maned lion, framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Titles appear in a black-and-white film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents The Secret Garden. Copyright 1949 by Lowe's Incorporated. This film is described by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Lisa Benjamin. Read by Kriya Sakakini. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. More titles appear, starring Margaret O'Brien, Herbert Marshall, and Dean Stockwell, with Gladys Cooper, Elsa Lancaster, Brian Roper, Reginald Owen, Aubrey Mather, George Zucko, Lowell Gilmore, and Dennis Hoey. Screenplay by Robert Ardrey. Based upon the novel by Frances Hodgson Burnett. Musical score by Bronislaw Caper. Director of photography, Ray June, ASC. Art directors, Cedric Gibbons and Yuri McCleary. Music conductor, Andre Previn. Produced by Clarence Brown. Directed by Fred M. Wilcox. In black and white, we move closer and closer to the closed wooden door of a garden. Vines of wisteria cover the wall around it. Tulips sprout in a patch beside it. A child's hands insert a key into the lock, turn the iron handle, and slowly push open the door. Now, several vultures swoop above a courtyard where two military men in khaki uniforms and pith helmets stand sweating.
You get used to it when you've been out east a bit. Cholera, the plague, it strikes white men and natives. Men, women, and children, they die by the thousands. The cholera makes no distinction. For a long while, nobody knows who's dead and who got away to the hills. Nobody knows but the vultures, circling, waiting. Mostly this is what you have afterwards. An empty place with no breathing soul.
It's not England, Barney. I venture to say you'll get used to it. You haven't been here long enough. I have.
The lanky officer leads the chubby Barney to a nearby home. Inside, a vulture hops off a table of crumbs.
Study Yarin and husband. No children identified.
Barney checks a list. Then they cross the courtyard to a different house.
I had tea on this veranda once.
John Lennox. Mrs. John Lennox.
If I'd been a captain or better, they'd have asked me again.
Barney plops into an intricately woven rattan chair. The officer squeezes his arm.
Remember, Barney, I told you, the cholera makes no distinctions.
He approaches swinging doors, pushes them open, and enters a large sitting room furnished with a mixture of English pieces and Indian decorations. The officer walks through the sitting room to an airy bedroom. Sunlight pours through the windows. Sheer curtains hang from a canopy above the bed. He steps up to a vanity table, covered with brushes and perfume bottles. A framed photo rests on the corner. He picks it up. Two ovals separate pictures of a man and a woman. Both wear early 20th century formal garb. The woman is lovely, with dark hair and delicate features. The man, dashing and handsome. Suddenly cocking his ear, the officer glances around. He sets the frame back on the table and turns toward a nearby room. Peering through shutters in the closed door, he spies a figure inside. He opens the slats. It's a young girl. She kneels on the floor, surrounded by costumed dolls. As he swings open the door, she starts and turns to face him. She has dark hair and a braid down her back, wide eyes and small, pert features.
Who are you?
I might ask, miss, who are you?
My name is Mary Lennox, and you haven't answered my question. Where's my servant? Where's cook? Sadie said my servant was ill. And then Sadie never came back.
Are you a relative of the Lennoxes?
I told you my name was Mary Lennox. My father is Mr. John Lennox, and my mother is Mrs. John Lennox. They went away. They're always going away.
Your servants, some of your servants became very ill. They died. The others were frightened. They ran away to the hills.
I knew it. I knew they didn't all die. Mother's right. She says you can't trust natives. They ran away, didn't I tell you?
She addresses her dolls as he walks out.
He's a silly-looking man, isn't he? But a silly-looking hat.
They was identified, sir.
Well, be certain. Mr. and Mrs. John Lennox. Check it again.
They died at the hospital, sir. No mistake. What's up, sir? What's in there?
Their little girl. I never knew they had any children.
Mary approaches.
Who's he?
He's my orderly. His name is Barney.
Why does he look so funny? You needn't stand up. You're an officer, aren't you? You'd better stand.
Barney rises.
I'm not supposed to be in here at all, you know. If Mama should catch me. Oh.
She drops a cookie, then bends to pick it up.
You never come in here, Mary.
Of course not. Children aren't permitted in the front of the house. Don't you know anything?
I came here once. I didn't see you. Is that why?
Of course it's why.
She kicks away crumbs.
There. She'll never see those.
I never even knew Mrs. Lennox had a little girl. Has she any more children?
No. Well, can't you see? I'm the only one here in the house.
Well, I meant home in England, perhaps. Have you a grandmother? Somebody else home in England? Haven't you any aunts or uncles?
Barney bends over.
What's wrong with that man? If he's a common soldier, he should be standing at attention.
Barney.
Yes, sir?
He looks funny.
Never mind about Barney. There's something I've got to tell you. I shan't be very good at it. So you'll have to forgive me. You see, I knew your mother.
She was a very beautiful woman. I knew your father, too. He was a fine man. Well, what I'm trying to say is, you must trust me.
They're dead, too.
Please.
Mama didn't go away. She died.
I know how you loved her.
Stop talking.
I know how she must have loved you.
Stop talking about it. She's dead. And who's going to take care of me?
Throwing her cookie back on the floor, she runs into her bedroom and starts kicking her dolls. She grabs one off a shelf and flings it down with the others. Then, Mary hurls herself onto the bed and buries her face in the pillow. Now, an ocean liner heads over the sea. Later, children walk down a gangplank onto a dock. Later still, two women stand with them. One holds a blonde girl's hand.
It was good of you, nurse, looking after so many of them the whole long voyage to England.
Oh, they looked after themselves. They became great friends.
Poor things. All of them orphans. Say goodbye, Muriel, darling.
Goodbye, Muriel.
As the woman leads the girl off, Mary sits on a trunk, sulking.
Her grandmother hasn't got any money. I heard nurse say so.
I hope my aunt half as nice as Muriel's grandmother.
Your aunt probably hasn't got any money either. I'm going to live with my uncle. In a great house in Yorkshire. It has 100 rooms. And I shall have acres and acres of gardens. And a great many servants. My uncle is Mr. Archibald Craven. And he has a great deal of money.
Your uncle's a hunchback.
He is not.
He is.
He isn't.
I had no say so.
I'll cut out to him. Get her.
She grabs the boy by the throat. The nurse rushes over to separate
them. No, not just as we're saying goodbye.
A stern-faced woman approaches, dressed all in black. She surveys the group.
Can I help you? These are the orphans from India, I presume. Which one is Mary Lennox?
Are you Mrs. Medlock?
Yes.
This one.
Unattractive, isn't she?
Oh, I wouldn't say that, Mrs. Medlock. It's just her manner.
I'm your uncle's housekeeper. We've a long journey. Come along. Have you no luggage? Unattractive, I call her.
Mary hands Mrs. Medlock her valise. As they walk off into the shadows, the others stare after them.
Oh, golly.
Children.
Now, a train speeds through the countryside, smoke billowing from its stack. Nighttime. As rain pours in sheets, a horse-drawn carriage drives down a path. Inside, Mary sits beside a sleeping Mrs. Medlock. A blanket covers their legs. Mary timidly gazes out a window.
Mrs. Medlock?
Hmm?
Are we crossing the moors?
The housekeeper's eyes remain shut. Mary turns away from her to look out the window once more. Outside, a driver and a footman sit drenched on top of the carriage. Two white horses, blinders on the sides of their heads, charge through the storm. The wheels struggle to roll through ruts of mud. Later, the carriage pulls up to a Gothic-style mansion on an estate. Inside moments later, a butler holds out a lit candelabra as Mary and Mrs. Medlock cross the threshold.
A bad night, Mrs. Medlock.
Bad indeed, Charles. A long and nasty journey. Mr. Pitcher about?
Yes, there.
Fetch him, will you? Wait here a minute, Charles.
They walk off, leaving Mary alone in the dark foyer. The ceiling stretches up over 20 feet. Candles flicker as a breeze wafts through the room. A framed portrait hangs over an empty fireplace. A suit of armor rests in a corner, throwing a shadow onto a wall. Mary turns as a man walks down a staircase wearing a robe.
Good evening, madam.
She inspects his back.
Something amiss?
Oh, no, it's just that the children on the boat said that you were a hunchback.
His eyebrows shoot up and he purses his lips. Mrs. Medlock re-enters.
He doesn't want to see her.
So long as I know what's expected of me.
What's expected of you, Mrs. Medlock, that is he doesn't see what he doesn't want to see.
Well and good, Mr. Pitcher.
He's leaving for London late tomorrow. Our rooms are ready. Good night, Miss Mary.
He goes back upstairs.
Come along.
Why, I thought he was my uncle.
Mr. Pitcher, he's just Mr. Craven's man. Rules the roost like a high and mighty, I might add. No better than me.
She leads Mary through a long, dark corridor to a closed door. As she opens it, the girl stares into the shadows at the end of the hall. Mrs. Medlock turns to her.
Well?
Mary swivels to face her, wide-eyed.
What's down there? The 100 rooms?
Never you mind what's down there. Come along.
They enter a well-lit room where a log burns in the fireplace. A canopied bed sits in a corner. A table and stool stand in the middle.
Here's where you play. There's where you sleep. You might have a bright word. Tore out everything for you, he did. Painting, furnishing, trips to London for clothes and such. I have my hands full, I can tell you.
She takes a nightgown out of a closet.
You might say you're thankful.
What's down that hall?
Now let things be understood. You play here and you sleep there. Down the stairs on the right is the kitchen and the outdoors. All that you're welcome. But don't you go poking about the house.
Why didn't my uncle want to see me? I came all the way from India and his light's on. And it's the queerest house I've ever seen in all my life. And he doesn't want to see me.
Well, you might say he's a queer one.
Well, I don't want to see him.
You're a queer one, too.
Mrs. Medlock goes to a window to shut it. When she turns back, she finds the girl gone. She steps into the hall where Mary gazes into the shadows.
I heard somebody crying.
The housekeeper pulls her back into the room.
I told you, no gadding about the house.
I wasn't gadding about. I heard somebody crying. I'm sure I heard somebody crying.
The wind off the moors, wuthering round the house. And you talk about someone crying. Good night.
She walks out, shutting the door. Mary steps up to it and tries the handle. It's locked. Outside, the rain continues to fall. Daytime. Sunlight floods Mary's room through an open window. The girl lies in bed, gazing out. A maid, carrying an armful of logs, pokes her head in. She's plump, with a cheery face and a dimple in her chin.
Hey, that awake!
Who are you?
Why, I'm Martha.
She dumps the logs on the floor.
What does the think of that room?
I hate it. What's so funny?
Well, if you don't like it, then look out of window. Look at moors.
I hate them.
Well, you've not seen them yet. Who says that because they're bare and lonely with the winter time. You wait till it's spring and summer, and the gorse and the heather are smelling high with honey, and the skylark making noises.
What kind of language are you talking?
Yorkshire, miss. Mrs. Medlock, she says I'll be a servant ever, what with the Yorkshire drooling from my tongue like rancid butter. Rancid butter. say, but the good Lord knows I'll never speak a proper language.
Are you my servant?
Well, you might say I'm Mrs. Medlock's servant, and then you might say that Mrs. Medlock's Mr. Craven's servant, and they're Mr. Craven's niece, so in a manner of speaking, I'm their servant. Aye.
Oh. What's so funny?
I'm always laughing.
Mary throws a pillow.
Martha! In a minute. Martha! In a minute.
Mary comes up to her.
Hey, but that's thin.
My pillow's on the floor. Pick it up.
What there needs is exercise. Fresh air, good food, and exercise are plenty. It's what my mother says will do for the skinniest, and she should know my mother should, raising 10 of us.
I said my pillow's on the floor. Pick it up.
Well, pick it up thyself and have a bit of exercise for starting.
I want another servant. In India, it's the custom for servants to do as they're told. And she doesn't laugh. My servant never laughs. Never! I hate you.
My uncle doesn't want to see me, and nobody will do as I say, and I can't go anywhere.
It's dreadful.
Get away, honey! Go away!
There now. They feel strange here and lonely. After I've had thy porridge and got myself dressed, geez, I can go out and play.
My brother Dickon will be coming up to see thee.
Your brother?
Dickon. And I like Dickon. What a one he is for the growing things and the animals. Half lives on the moors, he does. Almost like an animal himself. My mother told him to go and play with that poor child, she said, all by herself up in that great lone house. Yes, they'll be right fond of Dickon.
I never saw such a servant. Does that think I play with thy brother? do you think I play with your brother? I hate him. I hate him. I hate you. Go away.
Hi. Get yourself dressed.
Wait a minute. Aren't you going to dress me?
What?
Well, in India, it's the custom.
They cannot dress herself.
She starts out.
Of course I can. It's just...
Mary studies her clothes, laid out on the bed. She picks up a pair of unlaced boots, then grabs hold of a dress and turns it around. A column of 24 tiny buttons runs down the front. She holds it up to her, staring down at all those buttons. Later, she stands in the kitchen, facing the servants. Her boots are only half-laced. The dress is poorly buttoned. Several of the holes are undone. With a haughty look, she eyes everyone.
I do not eat porridge. I said I do not eat porridge.
It's breakfast.
Mrs. Medlock fingers the unbuttoned collar of Mary's dress.
I don't want any breakfast, Mrs. Medlock. I'm going for a walk in the garden.
Putting on her coat, she hurries out. Upstairs, on a balcony overlooking the garden, a man stands with his back to us, watching Mary. His shoulder is humped beneath his dark cape. Below, the girl strolls down a path bordered by shrubbery. She stops between two rows of bushes. They have been neatly clipped and sculpted into the shapes of trees. She glances around, then starts to skip down the path. A little later, she ambles down a stone staircase, coming up to a high-walled enclosure. It's surrounded by brambles and shrubs. She stares up at it curiously, then runs around to the other side. That's covered too. She can't find a door or gate leading in. Mary glances up. A bird perches on top of the brick wall. It has black feathers and a long, pointed beak. She runs down the gravel-covered path, searching for a way inside. Circling completely around the enclosure, she finds herself back where she started. There's just no way in or out. Her brow knots in bewilderment. Standing beside a bust of a bearded man, she stares up at the bird. From its vantage point on the wall, it can see into the enclosure. The bird spreads its wings and peers down at her.
Well, don't be so cocky about it.
Mary saunters a little ways away. She stops beside a fallen tree and sits on the trunk, taking off her knit hat. The bird swoops down and lands beside her. Mary scowls at it.
away, go away, go away.
The bird flies off.
That's frightened him. Now be the most quiet.
A freckle-faced boy sits in a tree with a squirrel on his shoulder. The bird flaps to his other shoulder.
Frightened, yeah? Come on, then. Come on. That must be the one from India.
I'm Mary Lennox.
I'm Dickon. My sister Martha swore that'd be black. At least dark brown. That's frightened him.
What are you doing here? Where did you come from?
I came to the moor path. I've watched thee go about the garden. There's no way in.
In where?
The secret garden. He locked the gate long years ago.
Who locked the gate?
The master, Mr. Craven, thy uncle.
What do you know about it?
I know what's said. He locked the gate and buried the key, and ne'er a soul's been in there since.
I don't believe you. Do you know why I don't believe you? Because there isn't any gate. I looked.
Hey, so have I.
He calls to the bird.
Come on, come on, come on, then.
You know everything, don't you?
Only what's said.
Who cares about us, old God? And I don't.
That's why they run about it so often.
What were you doing, hiding in the bushes watching me?
I came to play with thee. My mother said they might be lonely.
Well, I'm not. And I don't play with any servant's brother. I've never heard of anything so ridiculous. So I can just go home. I mean, you can just go home.
The bird flies off again.
Thou must learn not to frighten animals. My mother sends thee a skipping rope.
A what?
A skipping rope. I can play with a skipping rope.
She examines it for a moment, then glances back.
Dickon,
He's gone. She peeks under the tree and looks all over. He's nowhere to be found. Mary turns toward the bird standing on the brick wall. Later, she sits in her room eating while Martha tends the fire.
Hey, for a young lady that took no porridge to breakfast, I'm certainly making up a tea time.
I'm not hungry, I'm just eating. Give me another biscuit.
At the rate they're going, they'll soon resemble something lovelier than a slat. Hey, what's that?
A skipping rope, any fool knows that.
Oh, so they saw Dickon. Did they ever meet such a lad?
No, I hate him.
Martha starts to skip, jumping over the rope.
So that's what you do with it.
Of course. Any fool knows that.
You mean to tell me in India they have no skipping ropes? It's very undignified. You may hand me another biscuit. Martha, why would somebody lock up a garden and bury the key?
Oh, so they can tell thee.
I was just wondering how long it's been locked up.
I'm just a serving maid. I have no head for such matters.
Martha, I heard somebody crying last night when I went to bed. I'm sure I heard somebody cry.
It was the scullery maid. Aye, it was last night. She had a toothache. What a fearful row.
Miss Medlock said it was the wind.
Oh, she did?
Martha, has my uncle left for London yet?
He leaves tonight, miss. Why'd thou ask?
I'm going to see my uncle. I don't care whether he wants to see me or not.
You must speak to Mrs. Medlock.
This is the funniest house I've ever seen in all my life. Gardens locked up, rooms you can't go into, people crying, and nobody will say anything. I'll make my uncle explain things.
Child, thou dost not know thy uncle.
Mary exchanges a look with Martha, then bolts out of the room.
Mary!
She heads down the dark corridor.
Mary!
Martha quickly follows, picking up the skirt of her dress in order to run.
Mary!
Farther down the hall, Mary opens the door to a room and ducks inside. Alone in the parlor, the girl smiles to herself, then starts to look around. The room is dark, with only a few pieces of furniture. Mary races over to another door and steps through it. She's now inside a large bedroom. Stepping around the bed, she eyes heavy drapes hanging from the thick mahogany posts. As she darts out, her shadow looms on the wall behind her. Mary steps into a third room, filled with furniture covered with sheets. She nervously eyes the creepy, misshapen forms, then runs into the next room.
Martha! Martha!
A sheet covering a tall chair resembles a ghost. Mary's eyes widen in fear. Backing away, she steps through a door into a small hallway. She peeks around a corner and spies Mrs. Medlock entering the room. A maid comes out and heads down the hall. Then, the man from the balcony steps out of the mysterious room. Carrying a walking stick, he strides past, without noticing Mary. His hump protrudes from his left shoulder. As the girl takes a step forward to watch him go, Mrs. Medlock comes back out.
You? What are you doing here? What do you want?
I want to go back to my...
The housekeeper takes the girl's arm and leads her away. Moments later, they stand outside Mary's room.
Next time you'll stay where you belong.
Mrs. Medlock. Please, what was in that room?
Go to bed.
Mary enters her room to find Mr. Pitcher.
Where have you been?
Nowhere.
Your uncle wants to see you. He's leaving for London.
I don't want to see him.
Mary, your uncle wants to see you. They're keeping him waiting.
She starts out the door. He follows, holding a lit candle. A little later, the tall, balding pitcher leads Mary up a staircase to a landing. They stop in front of double doors. They walk through, entering a dreary study. Inside, a man sits in the shadows, clutching a glass of brandy.
Miss Mary, sir.
Pitcher steps out, leaving them alone.
Come closer.
She does, and finds he's the man with the hump. He sits beneath a large portrait of a beautiful woman posing in a lush garden.
Closer.
Yes, sir.
Dark-haired, her uncle Craven has stern features, circles under his eyes, and a cleft in his chin. He eyes her somberly.
I'd hoped you might be beautiful.
No, sir.
You're welcome in this house. I shall be leaving for London in a few minutes. I spend as little time here myself as possible. You'll be alone. You'll find my being away of no great loss to you. I'm not amusing. I keep to myself. I have my books. I drink.
Mary's gaze shifts from Craven to the portrait, then back to her uncle. He finishes his brandy.
I'd hoped you might be beautiful.
He tosses his glass at the fireplace.
Is there anything particular you want?
No, sir.
Is there anything you'd care to ask me? I should be gone a long time.
Yes, sir, just...
Just what?
Who's the lady in the picture?
My wife, she's dead. She died 10 years ago. This is an excellent house for bitterness, for regrets, for anger against the gods. It's a poor house for children, Mary. But perhaps you're equal to it. I'm not. Good night.
Taking his hat and walking stick, Craven leaves. Mary stares after him, her eyes wide and awestruck. Daytime. Mary skips up to the square, vine-covered enclosure with her new jump rope. Her foot gets caught in the rope. She starts again. It gets caught again and again. The second time, her hat falls off. She picks it up, puts it on, and steps over the rope to try again. Half stumbling and half skipping, she struggles down the gravel path.
Oh, Father!
She flings the rope away, then marches over to pick it up. Looking up, she spots the black bird atop the brick wall. She gazes into the hedges surrounding the mysterious enclosure, then steps into them to look for a way inside. The bird walks along the wall to follow her progress. As she comes back out, Mary stops short in front of a gray-bearded man.
Oh.
He studies her.
Hello. I'm Mary Lennox. I'm from India. Who are you?
I'm Ben Weatherstaff, and I'm the Ed Gardener, and I come from Hyderabad. What wast thou doing beside the wall?
The wall? What wall? Oh, I was just skipping rope. I'm always skipping rope.
Let's see they skip it.
Well, I don't feel like it right now. Mr. Weatherstaff, what kind of bird is that?
A raven. I've never seen a raven before.
Well, in India, we have lots of other birds.
The raven flies down to them and ambles right up to Mary.
Oh, look at him!
She bends down and gazes at the bird with a bright smile.
Why, he likes me.
I might say it comes natural. Va and me, we're faces like pickles. He likes me, he likes thee.
Does he live on the other side of the wall?
Aye, perhaps.
Have you ever been on the other side of the wall, Mr. Weatherstaff?
Why dost thou ask?
Oh, I was just wondering. Have you?
Perhaps. In the old days.
How long has it been locked up?
10 years, come summer.
10 years?
What of that?
Oh, nothing. My uncle just happened to mention, well, we were having a little talk, and he said that Mrs. Craven, that she...
He told thee about it?
Not exactly.
Let him tell thee the rest of it.
Pierre! Both of thee!
Well, good day, Mr. Weatherstaff.
She strides down the path. The gardener turns to the hedges and starts to trim them. Clenching a pipe between his lips, he has a shaggy beard and a large nose. Peeking around the corner, Mary checks to make sure he isn't watching, then steps into the hedge on the other side of the enclosure. She feels along the vine-covered wall, looking for an entrance. The raven flaps down and lands on a nearby bush.
Stop following me! Go away!
She shoos him off, then continues her search. After a few moments, she pokes her head out of the bushes, then steps out and turns to the bird, who stands on the path.
It's all right, as long as you don't make yourself so conspicuous. There's bound to be a gate somewhere.
The bird pulls a worm out of a hole in the ground. Mary cringes.
You're disgusting. Well, I suppose we all have to eat sometime. He could have walled it up so there isn't any gate. Why should he want to do that?
The raven waddles up to a mound of dirt and starts to peck into it.
No, I'm not going to look. I saw what you did last time.
The bird flaps up and lands on her shoulder. He stands there for a moment, then swoops back down to the mound of dirt. He points at it with his beak.
I'm not going to help you.
He slowly pulls a key out of the earth. Bug-eyed Mary races over, snatches it up, then excitedly shoves it into her pocket. Weatherstaff comes up behind her. She anxiously rises to face him.
I was just digging for worms. He was hungry.
What's in that pocket?
Oh, my skipping rope. That's all, just my skipping rope.
Nervously holding his gaze, she takes the rope out of her pocket, then starts to skip.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight.
Her foot gets caught. She tumbles to the ground, then stares back at Weatherstaff. Nighttime. Mary sits up in bed, cocking her ear. She determinedly gets to her feet and puts on a robe over her nightgown. She thrusts the tip of a long taper into the fireplace, sets it aflame, then uses it to light a candle. Stepping up to her bedroom door, she opens it and walks out into the dim corridor. Her shadow stretches out behind her as she starts down the long hallway. The candlelight bounces off her face, illuminating her anxious eyes, which flit back and forth as she takes slow, careful steps. Turning a corner, she almost bumps into someone. It's only her reflection in a mirror. She breathes a sigh of relief, then continues down the hall. Stopping in front of the door to the mysterious room, she presses her ear to it and listens. She opens it and enters a sitting room. Walking through it, she stops at a second door leading further in. She sets her candle down on a side table, then slowly opens the door to find a bedroom. A young boy lies in bed with his back to her. His tousled curls rest on his pillow. As Mary steps closer and closer, the child's shoulders heave with sobs. Suddenly, he turns to face her. Tears stream down his chubby face. Sitting up, he gapes.
You're a ghost.
I'm not at all a ghost. Are you?
No. I'm Colin Craven. Who are you?
I'm Mary Lennox. Mr. Craven's my uncle.
He's my father.
Your father?
Well, so I have a cousin.
But you can't be the one who was making all that noise.
When?
The night Mr. Craven left for London.
Oh. Oh, yes. I was having a tantrum.
A tantrum? Why, that's ridiculous.
Not at all.
It is. I've had dozens of tantrums, and I've never made that much noise.
Of course not. Dr. Griddlestone says I have the worst tantrum south of the Scottish border. It's 85 miles to the Scottish border. I looked it up on the map.
Well, I never...
You may ask Dr. Griddlestone.
Why hasn't anyone ever told me about you?
Oh, they're not allowed to talk about me.
Who won't allow it? Your father?
No, I won't allow it. They have to do what I say. Don't like to be looked at, either. A lady looked at me at Seaside once, said poor child, and put a face not that far from mine.
What did you do?
I barked like a dog and she ran away.
Well, I never in all my life. Why don't you like to be looked at?
Because I'm a cripple. Of course, you didn't know. Yes, I'm a cripple. I hate the word cripple. Don't you hate it?
Well, I never thought about it. I really just...
I can't move my legs. I can't move them an inch. I'll tell you something else. If I live to grow up, I'll get a hump on my back. Horrid, isn't it?
Well, I really...
It's all right. I shan't live to grow up.
How do you know?
Oh, everybody says so. They don't know I'm listening. I keep my eyes closed so they think I'm asleep. But that's what they say. I'll never live to grow up.
I don't believe you. Well, I don't. How does anybody know?
I don't know whether I like you or not.
And I don't believe you're going to get a hump on your back.
Don't say that.
Well, I don't. If you're going to get one, where is it?
Don't you dare talk like that. Sometimes I can almost feel it. Go away. I don't want to ever see you again. Never, never. No, stay here.
I swear to goodness, I never met anyone like you in all my life.
Didn't you? Honestly?
Doesn't anyone ever come to see you?
Oh, my father. He doesn't like to see me, though. He doesn't come very often.
Why doesn't he like to see you?
Oh, he knows when I grow up, I'll be just like him. He hates me. Of course, I shan't live to grow up, so he knows that, too.
Do you know what I think you are? I think you're crazy. I do. You and your father. What was your mother like?
I don't know. She died when I was born.
Then you're 10 years old.
How did you know?
Well, your father said that. Well,
what?
Oh, nothing. Just that she died 10 years ago. Colin, do you know anything about a secret garden? A garden that's been all locked up and no one's been into for... 10 years?
I never go outdoors. I detest going outdoors.
Well, have you ever heard anyone say that?
That's silly. If there was any such place, I'd have made them show it to me.
But... What happened to your mother?
She was killed. You're a very dull person.
Colin, what do you mean she was killed?
Oh, a tree fell down or a limb or something. It was an accident. That's her over there.
He nods to a velvet drape hanging over the wall.
Pull the curtain.
Mary tugs a cord, revealing a painting of a woman.
She's beautiful, isn't she? Did you ever see anyone so strong-looking? That's enough. Close the curtains.
She eyes him.
People must do as I say. I said, close the curtains.
Don't you want to look at her?
No, I hate her.
Mary pulls the cord, closing the drapes. Colin smiles slyly.
You're shocked because I hate my mother.
I am not.
No. Most people are shocked. After all, she was my mother and she is dead.
What's that? I hate my mother.
Really?
She never let anyone see me because I wasn't pretty. You needn't think hating your mother so special.
But it isn't so wicked for you. After all, your mother isn't dead.
Oh, yes, she is.
She is? Really? You must tell me about yourself someday.
Well,
not
I don't. Colin, you don't know where it was that your mother was killed.
You act as if you know something that I don't know. I don't like people that know things I don't know. I don't like secrets. It was somewhere on the grounds. That's all I know. I'm sleepy. You may come and play with me tomorrow.
Do you know what you remind me of? A young Roger.
A Roger? That's a kind of a king, isn't it? In India.
She nods.
I like that. A Raja. What'd you say your name is?
Mary.
You must sing me to sleep, Mary.
She purses her lips with a glower and starts out, then turns back, sitting beside him on the bed. Colin lies still, with his eyes closed.
Mata talaka ko gai. Mata talaka ko gai. Yadi kala jani. Mata palamane. Soni ki
pa. That's a strange song. I must ask you about it someday.
Daytime. In the moors, Mary races down a country lane, but suddenly trips and falls. She gets back on her feet. Later, she runs up to an old woman who hoes outside a cottage.
Are you Dickens' mother?
I am. Thou must be Mary Lennox.
Oh, thank you so much for the skip rope, Mrs. Sowerby. Do you think if I spoke to Dick and Dickon, he'd speak to me?
Thou might try and see. He's caring for the little one.
Dickon sits with a lamb and another animal.
Oh, what's that?
A fox cub. His name's Captain.
Oh. Oh, Dickon, are you still angry with me?
When was I ever angry with thee?
Oh, good. Well, Dickon, I've got so many secrets, I'm dying. I'm just dying.
That seems most healthy.
I don't mean that kind of dying. It's just that, oh, Dickon, I need you terribly, terribly. All you have to do is listen to me. What good's a secret if there's no one to tell it to? But first you must swear.
I swear?
Oh, good, Dickon. There's a secret boy, you know.
A what?
A secret boy. He lives in one of those 100 rooms. Nobody ever gets to see him, and he's 10 years old, and he doesn't go anywhere. And he's Mr. Craven's son.
Colin, the one that can't walk.
Why, I thought it was a secret.
Well, Mary, I've never seen him, but it's no secret. Mrs. Tamartha tends him some.
Why, I was never so disappointed in all my life. I hate you, I hate you.
She produces the key.
What's that?
Thou knows everything.
Not be a deal, I don't. The garden.
The secret garden.
They found the gate.
No, not yet.
He grabs the key.
Dickon! Dickon! Wait for me!
As he runs off, she and the lamb follow. Later, the children crouch beneath a bush, watching Weatherstaff tend to the path.
It's bound to be behind those bushes.
What if there is no gate? What if he sealed the wall up with stone?
If he had done that, then why should he bury the key? That's not sensible. That man, he's always looking around those bushes. It's the only place I haven't had a chance to look.
The raven swoops down.
Good morning.
Mary and Dickon share a look as the bird spots them and waddles over. Weatherstaff looks up from his work and eyes the bird suspiciously. He sets down his rake and walks toward the raven, getting nearer and nearer to the children.
What ails thee?
Mary turns toward Dickon.
You know what?
He's gone. The boy pokes his head over the bush. He cups his hand around his mouth, calling to the bird. The raven flies away. Dickon comes back to join Mary. He points to the gardener, who's moved around the corner of the wall. The children quickly run into the shrubs surrounding the enclosure, hiding among them. Weatherstaff looks up. He doesn't see them and goes back to his work. Dickon and Mary begin to feel along the vine-covered wall, searching for the gate. The raven flies to the top of the enclosure to watch.
I'm afraid he's sealed it up.
Mary finds a wooden door. He comes over to her, and together they part the vines to find an iron handle.
Oh, Dickon, wait.
He covers her mouth with his hand.
There.
The raven lands near the gardener.
Ah, truth.
It's dinner time.
He puts his tools in a wheelbarrow and rolls it away. The children turn to the gate and try to push it open. It doesn't budge.
The key, Dickon.
He takes it out of his pocket.
Oh, open it up, Dickon, please.
With a shy smile, Dickon gives Mary the key. She fits it into the lock, then tries to push the door open. It still doesn't budge. She shoots him a worried glance, then starts to turn the key in the lock. Mary flashes a smile, then she and Dickon push hard on the door. It cracks open. They shove harder, making their way into the secret garden. Opening the door wider, they push brambles and overgrown weeds out of the entryway, then step inside. As Dickon shuts the door behind them, they gaze in wonder. The garden is surrounded on all sides by the 12-foot-high brick wall. Barren branches and dead bushes lie all around. Trees stand leafless, their limbs stretching toward the sky. The children step further into the garden.
Thou and me, Mary, and none else in 10 years. Roses. How that old bush would bloom with a bit of pruning.
Why, you could prune it, Dickon. No one would know except us.
They turn to another bare bush of tiny twigs.
Lilacs. Such lilacs.
What are lilacs?
Has never seen lilacs? Mary, in India, they never spied a lilac bush in bloom.
She shakes her head.
Thou'll see lilacs.
Turning to a small pond, he picks up a large rock and hurls it.
Dickon!
She kneels over a patch of dirt.
Dickon, look! Something's coming up already.
Daffodils. I can't tell you what a daffodil's like, except it's yellow.
Oh, Dickon, we can take care of them.
Aye.
We can come here every day. We can dig around them and get rid of all those weeds. We can make it just the way it used to be. And nobody would know, just us. Oh, what a secret.
Aye.
They stand together.
Dickon!
She spots a table covered with dead leaves. They walk over to it and start to pick through them, then sweep them off. Removing several of the leaves, they find a tea set with cups and saucers.
Two.
Dickon turns to find a broken tree limb lying across a chair. They stare at it in puzzlement.
Colin said his mother had an accident, that a tree fell on her or a limb or something. You don't suppose?
Aye. Just the two of them. They were taking their tea.
Mr. Craven over there.
Oh, how dreadful.
He locked up the garden and left things just as they were.
Could be. I always heard it was her garden. And none came here but just herself and the master. And old Ben Weatherstaff.
Ben?
Aye. He tended it. Just the two of them. Taking their tea. And then, the limb of a tree, falling from nowhere. Poor Mr. Craven. What a terrible accident.
An axe is embedded in the tree's trunk.
Dickon!
They rush over to it. Mary touches the handle.
Oh, Mary!
She runs off. He follows.
I just didn't want to look at it any longer.
Aye.
Knotting her brow, she sits on a nearby rock.
But he couldn't have. Colin said how his father loved her. And if he loved her, it must have been an accident. It just must have.
Aye.
Dickon drops beside her.
A man, let's say, who'd done a bad thing, he'd not leave his axe for all to see.
Of course, he did lock up the garden and bury the key, but...
Well, all the same, the master, I've none seen him, but from all I've heard tell, he's a shy and a crippled man. Thou's met him, Mary. Would thou say he was the sort of a man to...
I don't know, Dickon.
He rises.
Mary, it's 10 long years, and I can't put my mind on dead things in the springtime.
I'm not going to think about it either. I'm not going to think about it one bit.
That's not such a bad-looking lass at that.
She bows her head.
Why, that's blushing like a beet.
She rushes to the garden gate, then turns back to face him.
Now we'll need a hoe. Two hoes, one for you and one for me. You might make a list of what we need. We have to have something to cut away all that dead stuff. I hate dead stuff, don't you?
That's an odd one, Mary.
Why, I'm not odd one bit. I don't know what you're talking about. It's lunchtime and I'm hungry. I'll meet you here at 2 o'clock.
She opens the door, then pauses.
Dickon, did you really mean what you said about that I'm not so bad looking?
She dashes off. Later, Mary sits on Colin's bed.
There they were, lions all around me. I'll finish the story some other time.
Mary Lennox, I told Martha if you didn't tell me stories this afternoon, I'd have a tantrum.
But if Mrs. Medlock should find out
that I... bother Mrs. Medlock. She has to do what I say. Everybody has to do what I say. Now, you finish that story.
Well, the lions attacked me, of course.
And the elephants?
Oh, the elephants were tame. They were helping me.
What'd you do?
Well, I hid behind a tree like this. And the elephants all lined up in front of me like this. The lions were over there. And they all roared like this. Arrah! Arrah! And the elephants all went with their trunks like this.
She swings her arms.
What time is it?
He checks his pocket watch.
It's only 3 o'clock.
What happened then? Never mind what happened then.
You're not going to go. What happened then?
Well, I ran home. The last I heard, the elephants were fighting the lions.
The story doesn't come out very well.
Well, it's a true story. If it doesn't come out well, I can't help it.
I forbid you to leave until you make the story come out better.
You forbid me?
Or you might play with me instead. Whichever you choose.
I'll play with you some other time. I have to meet Dickon.
Who's Dickon?
Oh, a boy I know. I don't like him. You don't like anything.
I do. I want you to stay here and play with me.
Oh, Colin, I don't want you to be angry with me, but I promise, Dickon.
Like is not some common, dirty little boy.
He is not.
Common, dirty, common, dirty.
You can't talk that way about Dickon. Why, he's the most wonderful, the most... I'm leaving.
Here I am ill. I can't walk and you won't stay and play with me.
Oh, Colin, please stop crying.
I can't help it if I cry. I'm not happy. I want somebody to play with me. You won't play with me. You don't like me.
Oh, stop it. I do like you.
You don't. I can't walk like other boys. I'm ill. You don't care. You don't even care if I'll never live to grow up.
Oh, stop it. You'll live as long as I will.
I won't.
You will. And if you think you can...
Mrs. Medlock enters with a heavy-set mustached man.
I don't want to ever see you again.
Make her go away. No one has to hear. I can't make her go away.
You good-for-nothing little scamp.
Why, I could cut off your head.
You frightful child. Can't you see that he's ill?
But Mrs. Medlock...
Get out of this room. I told you to stay away. If ever I find you here again, I'll have to talk to your uncle. You understand me? You're only living here by your uncle's kindness. Did you hear what I said?
Yes, Mrs. Medlock.
Oh, I'm so ill, Mrs. Medlock.
Mary leaves.
What a wretched child.
I'll die, Mrs. Medlock. I want to die.
There. I brought dear Dr. Griddleston to you.
She wouldn't go, and I couldn't get out of bed.
Poor boy.
The doctor lifts the bed covers, revealing Colin's legs and braces.
Boy. We'll never let this happen again. Will we, Mrs. Medlock?
Never.
Never. Poor boy. Now, have you been taking all the medicine that I left you last time?
Oh, yes, Dr. Griddleston.
And I'm sure that you've kept the windows closed and the irons. You've kept the irons on the legs constantly?
Oh, yes, Doctor.
Griddlestone feels Colin's wrist.
The pulse is a trifle weak.
Mrs. Medlock eyes the boy. Now, Mary saunters down the stone steps leading up to the secret garden. She jogs down the gravel path along the dense hedges. Peeking around the corner, she looks for Mr. Weatherstaff. The gardener's nowhere to be seen. With a glance over her shoulder, she ducks into the vines and pushes her way up to the gate. Reaching for the handle, she finds a folded-up note. It reads, "I will come back, Dickon." Come is spelled K-U-M. Mary smiles to herself, then fits the key into the lock, pushes the gate open, and steps into the secret garden. It's just as drab and barren as before. She walks through it, taking it all in.
My garden. My very own garden.
As she kneels on the ground, sifting through a patch of dirt, the raven drops down beside her.
Hello. Dickon will come back soon. His spelling isn't very good, but he'll come back. Then we'll help all we can. Maybe he'll live and grow and have a flower. That's the way we like things, Dickon.
Dickon and I.
She brushes leaves away from a tiny shoot. Another day, Mary wears a straw hat and spring dress and holds a daffodil. It has flat petals, which surround a dainty cup. Stepping through a side door, she enters the kitchen, where servants madly rush about.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. We may need another hot water bottle. Hurry, hurry.
Mary wanders through the chaos, serenely gazing at her flower. She strolls through the corridor and enters her room. Moments later, she sits at her table, studying the daffodil's long, pointed leaves. Martha bursts in.
Oh, it's a daffodil.
No.
But you don't understand. I've never seen a daffodil before.
Thou unfeeling child. Dost thou not hear the noise that's been going on since morning?
What's a tantrum?
Lord have mercy, he'll die of it.
Who will ever die of a tantrum? I know.
Martha gathers up books and toys and walks out. With a smirk, Mary rises and starts to shut the door.
Oh, Father!
She starts down the corridor. Mrs. Medlock exits Colin's room.
Get out! Get out! Get out!
Servants dash in and out.
Oh, I hate you!
Mary approaches and eyes a nurse who fixes a tray.
You're doing all the wrong things.
Nerves.
I only said you're doing all the wrong things.
Go away, child. He's hysterical, do you hear? Hysterical.
Quiet, all the nuts. You act like children.
If you're so clever, go in there yourself.
I would, but very, very let it stop where you are.
Mrs. Medlock strides up.
You're the one that started it all. The worst little scamp. Ever since I found you in his room, he's been getting worse and worse.
But Mrs. Medlock...
And now he says he can feel the bump on his back. And whose fault is it?
Stop shaking me, Mrs. Medlock.
I'll let your uncle know. You'll be sent away.
You're making me angry, Mrs. Medlock.
I'm making you angry. Why, you cold-hearted little animal. What you did to that poor boy. Breaking into his room, taunting him, teasing him.
But Mrs. Medlock, he asked me. He wouldn't let me go.
And now you can't even tell the truth. Mary, enough.
I'm in charge of this case.
Mary rushes in, alone.
I won't get out.
Hits him with a pillow.
Die! Die! Oh, you lied to Mrs. Medlock. You don't care what you say. You only care about yourself. You're mean and selfish. Stop being so proud of yourself. I'm worse than you are.
Colin knocks over a table.
I hate you! Everybody hates you!
Mary knocks over another table. He smashes a bowl of fruit to the floor. She breaks open a tin, flings a silver bowl, then upends a mahogany table. The servants stand in the doorway, watching in awe. Martha grins.
Go on, yell your head off!
Get out!
Scream! 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 I can scream louder than you can!
Colin stares in disbelief.
I told you so!
Yes. It's Medlock.
And don't start that crying again. I can scream louder than you can. And I can cry harder, too. Although I'm not going to. Why, you never met anyone as bad as I have.
You don't care how I'll never live to grow up.
Oh, stop it. You'll live as long as I will. You just say that to make people do what you say.
I will die. Don't you dare say how I won't die.
Why, you're proud that you're going to die. It makes you feel special. It makes you feel important. You're proud.
Nurse.
Don't you think I don't know all the tricks? Well, I was worse the day I was born than you are this very minute. And don't start that crying. I won't listen.
He buries his face in a pillow. Gazing down at him, her scowl begins to soften. She tilts her head and eyes Colin with concern. Sitting beside him, she takes his hand. He lifts his tear-streaked face to keenly stare into her eyes.
I do want to die, Mary. Really, I do.
You shouldn't.
There's a bump on my back.
I don't believe it.
There is. I could feel it this morning.
Well, it isn't there now.
It is. My father always said, oh, Mary, I don't want to live to grow up.
Mary turns toward the door.
Nurse.
The matronly woman enters the room.
Show me his back.
No. I don't want anybody to see me.
There.
No, please.
Now, I'm not going to hurt you. Now, there's a good boy. Just a minute. There we are. Now, turn over.
Colin wriggles and squirms as she unbuttons his pajama top, then pulls it down past his shoulder. Mary and the nurse run their hands along his bare back.
Why, there isn't a bump as big as a pin, just backbone lumps, and I have those. Everybody has. And if you ever say there's a bump, if you ever once say it, I'll laugh and laugh and laugh.
Colin winces, then drops his face into the pillow.
Make everybody go away.
The nurse walks out and shuts the door behind her, leaving the children alone. Mary strikes a match and lights a candle.
Mary, I'm tired. Hold my hand.
She does, sitting beside him.
Go to sleep. My father always said that someday I'd be like him. He likely believes it. Grown-ups can be awfully silly. But let's not think about him. It's been so awfully long since I've seen you. Tell me a story, Mary. Tell me a story about what you've been doing. I can't, Colin. Please? Well, it's a secret. Dickon and I have a secret. I never see anybody. I don't have any secrets. Could I meet Dickon someday? Why, of course. I'll bring him to see you tomorrow. Tell me some kind of story, Mary. Well, once upon a time, it isn't a true story, of course, but once upon a time, there was this secret garden. Oh, it was a lovely garden, with walls all around it, and vines and flowers. And grown-ups never came there, only children. It was just like a make-believe garden, only it wasn't make-believe. The lilacs and the tulips and the daffodils were the most beautiful flowers in all the world. No one could see them except the children. Oh, and the children were so happy. They were never mean and they never quarreled. Sometimes they wished that all the children in all the world could have a secret garden just like theirs.
Colin lies still, his eyes closed. Mary studies his face for a moment, flashes a tiny wistful smile, then rises and blows out the candle. The room grows dark. Morning. We briefly glimpse the expansive estate. Inside, Colin sits up in bed, reading a book entitled India. He sets it down and lies back, heaving a sigh. Suddenly, the raven swoops into the bedroom and lands on his lap. Wide-eyed, Colin's mouth drops open in astonishment. Next, the lamb scurries in and climbs onto the bed. As the bird flies back out, the bushy-tailed fox cub ambles in, followed by Mary and Dickon. Mary wears her straw hat and a pretty summer dress with a floral pattern. Dickon wears an open-necked shirt and clutches a soft cloth hat in his hand. They approach with sunny smiles.
Hello. This is Dickon.
Hello.
Hello. She wants a bit of breakfast. She's fair starving. It was mean not to feed her sooner, but I thought that I might like to feed her.
He gives Colin a bottle of milk.
There. That's right. Just like a baby.
Colin feeds the lamb.
What's that?
It's a fox cub. Dickon found it on the moors.
His name's Captain. He's what you might call a volunteer.
The raven returns.
Colin, can you keep a secret? But you've got to swear it on blood or something.
What secret?
Here. Swear on this key that you'll never, never tell.
Tell what?
Well, how can I tell you unless you swear?
How can I swear unless I know what I'm swearing about?
We can tell him, Mary. It's just about an old garden, and that's the key. An old garden full of things in bloom and lovely smells. And none's been in it for 10 whole years but just Mary and me.
The secret garden. Mary, I thought it was just a story you were making up. Why, I dreamt about it last night.
Aye, and Mary and me, we've dreamed of naught else since we first found it. We dreamed how fine it could be, and the weeds all gone, and the roses pruned, and none but us to see.
We must take thee there so thou mayst see it.
Colin frowns.
Oh, that's Dickon. He's always talking Yorkshire, and he gets me talking.
Must I talk Yorkshire?
No, you don't have to do anything. Just swear that you won't tell, and then we'll show the garden to you.
I never go outdoors.
servants look at me and... Anyway, that stupid old Dr. Girdlestone's coming this morning. He's bringing another doctor from London and they'll probably say I'm worse.
Oh, don't pay any attention to any old doctors. And about the servants, all you have to do is tell them to keep out of the gardens. They have to do what you say. They'd do us a big favor.
All three look toward the door.
Don't say anything.
Swear.
I swear.
Mrs. Medlock enters with Girdlestone and another doctor, who is tall and gray-haired. The raven flies around the room, alights on the door for a moment, then flaps onto Girdlestone's head. The sour-faced doctor reaches up to grab him. The bird pecks his hand.
Oh. Oh.
The other doctor chuckles.
Never in all my life have I ever...
The fox starts to munch on his shoe. Girdlestone hops on one foot, trying to kick him off. He spins around with the raven on his head and the fox on his foot, then kicks off his shoe. The raven flaps off, taking Girdlestone's hair with him. The doctor's completely bald. The bird takes off. Girdlestone, Mrs. Medlock, Dickon, and Mary quickly follow, racing into the hall. Left alone with Colin, the other doctor pats his chest in delight, then approaches the bed.
I'm Dr. Fortescue. You'll pardon me, my boy, but I practice in London. Is all this customary on a rural call? I'm beginning to understand why your father thought Dr. Girdlestone needed a little help. If you're the patient, and I presume you are, I wonder you've lived to such a ripe old age.
He lifts the covers and examines Colin's legs.
What are these for?
I can't walk.
I don't blame you, my boy. If I had to live in this house, I'd want to stay safe in bed, too.
Girdlestone re-enters with Mrs. Medlock, puts on his shoe, and clutches his toupee.
You're old enough. Why don't you just retire?
Dr. Fortescue, I'm so ashamed.
What did you lose?
What?
I thought you said this boy was ill.
I beg your pardon, sir?
Why don't you sell that stuff to the rag and bone man? What are you trying to do, build a bridge?
You speak most unprofessionally, sir.
If you think that what happened this morning to poor Dr. Girdlestone has ever happened before, you're wrong. Never in this house.
I assume such things never happened before. If they had, he'd be a different boy. If I speak unprofessionally, Doctor, it's because I haven't the slightest hope of influencing you.
Mary and Dickon eavesdrop.
It's my safe assumption, though, that the walls have ears and that the walls can understand what you cannot.
What kind of doctor is this? He's mad.
I shall report your conduct to Mr. Craven.
You will, and he'll back you up, not me. I diagnosed this case accurately, I believe, when I met the father. Examining the child was a formality.
How dare you say such things in front of the patient?
I speak in front of the patient with purpose. Fear is a disease. Fear can waste muscles, destroy men, paralyze nations. You're not the first, my boy, nor the last. I prescribe fresh air, exercise, wild animals and children, and take off those irons. I write the prescription on the wind.
Fortescue marches out.
You terrible children!
The irons stay on.
You can rest assured, Doctor, I'll take my orders from you.
Thank you, Mrs. Medlock. It is, of course, for Mr. Craven to decide. I'll report the whole matter to him without prejudice.
Dr. Girdlestone, I'm going outdoors.
You're not. You'll catch cold.
You'll allow me to go outdoors, Mrs. Medlock, or I can make myself quite difficult. You'll tell the servants to stay in the house. Dickon will wheel me. Tell Ben Weatherstaff and the gardeners to work in the greenhouses. I'll have no one about.
Dr. Girdlestone.
In India, Mrs. Medlock, it's accustomed to do as you're told.
That witch!
Let him have his way. Poor boy. He's had a difficult time of it. I may say I've had a difficult time of it myself.
He puts his toupee on backwards.
Oh, good day to you.
Oh, Dr. Girdlestone, I assure you this will never happen again. Good day.
Good day, Mrs. Medlock. Good day.
Girdlestone glares at the raven.
Oh, no.
He takes off his toupee.
Not again.
And leaves. Later, Dickon pushes Colin in a wheelchair, while Mary skips beside them. The three approach the garden gate.
It's right in there behind those bushes.
Colin stares up at the vine-covered wall in wonder.
Dickon, right now.
Before that goes in.
I want to know right now.
He throws a blanket off his lap and starts to undo his leg braces. Dickon helps him take them off, then stands beside him. Colin looks at his friends, then presses against the wheelchair's arms and begins to rise. Mary shoots a look at Dickon, who watches intently. Colin plants his feet on the path and slowly raises his body. But his legs slip out from under him and he slides to the ground.
Colin!
Dickon tries to help him up, but the boy shrugs him off. His shoulders shake with sobs. Dickon grabs hold of him and helps him back into the chair. Weatherstaff strides toward them.
Go away, Bip.
Go to the greenhouses, Weatherstaff.
You were told to work in the greenhouses.
The gardener tips his hat, then walks off. Mary takes Colin's hand.
You were wonderful, Colin. I'd hoped I might walk in. Could you wheel me?
Why?
As Dickon pushes Colin up to the garden door, Mary fits the key into the lock.
I was so frightened the first time, I could hardly turn the lock.
She pushes open the door. As they enter the garden, the black and white film suddenly turns to rich, vibrant color. The garden is now lush and well-kept. Blossoms of all different colors and shapes sprout all over. They approach a bush of bright red flowers.
These are roses.
Then, they pass a shrub of clustered purple ones.
Those are lilacs. Oh.
They stop to admire them, then turn toward the table and chairs. Everything is now neat and clean. A small tea service rests on the table. Mary points to the rippling blue pond behind them.
See the little lake?
Glancing all around, Colin becomes misty-eyed.
I shall live forever. I shall live forever.
Mary shares a smile with Dickon. Now, in a London house, the film has changed back to black and white. Craven stands at a window, looking out at the Big Ben clock tower and the buildings of Parliament. Mr. Pitcher stands in a corner, awaiting instructions. Craven goes over to a desk and holds a letter under a lamp. He studies it for a moment, then gazes up at a portrait of his wife. With a stern expression, he glances back at the letter.
Send the gentleman in.
Pitcher opens the door to Dr. Fortescue, who steps inside. Craven sets the letter on his desk, then suddenly sweeps it off.
Good evening, Dr. Fortescue.
Good evening, Mr. Craven.
Sit down.
Pitcher leaves.
Brandy?
No, thank you.
Last spring, you went up to my country place to examine my son. I had your report. I resented it.
Naturally.
Now, after some months, you write me a letter. Your fee was paid at the time of the examination. I had assumed that you regarded your services as ended. I resented your report. I regard the letter as outrageous.
Naturally.
You persist in regarding me as the patient, as well as my boy.
Perhaps I should have doubled my fee.
Why did you write me that letter?
Curiosity.
I may tell you, Dr. Fortescue, that when I engaged you, I assumed you were a doctor of medicine. Would it be impudent, sir, to call a physician of your standing an impostor and a most dangerous charlatan?
It would be impudence. I am an impudent man myself, Mr. Craven. I could understand.
Craven turns toward the portrait of his late wife.
There is his mother. You asked. I may tell you that our marriage was the one superbly happy experience in my less than happy life. And if you imply otherwise, I shall kill you.
Don't. I believe you.
For 10 years, Dr. Fortescue, my sanity has been a matter of, shall we say, touch and go. I've walked the most delicate balance between the gods and lightning, between life and the chasm. I have buried certain memories with utter care. I have vivified others. I don't enjoy the prospect of going insane. Your letter, Dr. Fortescue, has made my balance no easier.
That was its purpose.
Craven hurls his brandy glass across the room.
You are a passionate man, Mr. Craven.
You may leave.
That's a fine boy you have up there. You ought to go and see him once in a while.
I said you may leave.
I'm not too concerned with what happened between you and your wife. I'm a doctor, not a detective. I do know, though, that some kinds of memories won't stay buried, and so we have to bury the patient. What does concern me is the boy.
You said in your letter I wanted him to die.
Did I? Well, I'm not too diplomatic a man. It's a technical point, anyway. I just suggest, well, perhaps while you were keeping your
own balance with such care, you transferred your longing to die to your son. Leave my house! You! You're a normal man. You know what it is to be ugly? To be cursed and set apart? To live in fear? To be hated with things you can't help? To be pitied? To see your curse in every mirror? Prying eyes in every face?
Your son is as normal as I am.
You lie!
Well, I should be going. It's been a fascinating case, Mr. Craven. Give my regards to the children when you see them. I enjoy children.
With a nod, he heads for the door and opens it.
Good night.
He walks out. Now in color, the children lounge in the garden.
Would they call it near the last of summer, Dickon?
Aye. There's a smell of rain in the air.
What a fine summer it's been. What with digging and weeding and eating our mother's bread and jam, I'm fat like a pig.
Listen to the way that talks. Why, I'm fat too. I haven't got a single wrinkle left in my stocking.
Perhaps we shouldn't laugh. Dr. Griddleston's getting suspicious. He keeps asking me what we've been doing. I can hardly get my irons on anymore. They aren't big enough.
It's Mrs. Medlock I'm worried about. First she got suspicious because we ate too much. And then when we started bringing things from your house and ate hardly anything at home, then she got more suspicious. She's a suspicious woman.
Should I give her the sack?
No, that wouldn't do any good. Your father would just come back from London. Do you know what I think, Colin? I think you should have a tantrum.
A tantrum?
What if he doesn't feel like it?
You don't have to feel like it.
I don't think I could have a tantrum even if I wanted to.
Colin, not even for our secret.
Just like Dickens says, I don't feel like it.
Men.
Thought I could have one. Somebody has to have a tantrum. Dickens not the sort. Far, Mary.
She looks to Dickon, who nods.
Oh, dear. I don't feel like a tantrum either. Oh, what's wrong with us?
The raven flies over for a moment, then takes off.
What's wrong with him?
He's angry. It must be the coming of winter.
A ladder appears on the other side of the wall.
Mary! Run and hide!
I can't! Dickon!
Quick!
As they help Colin up, Weatherstaff peers down at them from the ladder.
Open the gate.
I hate him! I hate him! He had his orders on discharging.
Dickon rolls Colin up to the gate. Mary unlocks the door. Weatherstaff enters.
You have no right to be here, Weatherstaff.
Nor is thee. Get thee back to the house.
It's fine. I suppose you'll tell Mrs. Medlock.
I've known where thou was all summer, and I said naught. I beg of thee. I beg of thee. Get back to the house.
I'll have no one working here who knows.
I can't tell thee what would happen if he found me here.
If who found us here?
The father. The father's here with some gentlemen from London. Let him not find me here, I beg of thee.
Dickon!
As Dickon wheels Colin out, Mary glares at the gardener.
I hate you! I hate everybody!
She runs after the other two. Left alone, Weatherstaff shuts the door. Staring in awe, he respectfully removes his hat, then starts to stroll through the well-tended garden. A weeping willow tree stands against the back wall. Its thin-leaved branches droop toward the ground. The gardener lingers near a sundial, ambles past a rose bush, and bends to lift a low curving branch. He sniffs it. Straightening up, he faces the table and the chair where the fallen tree limb no longer rests. Now, in black and white, rain falls onto the estate. Inside, Mary lies awake in bed. A single candle burns on the nightstand beside her. She starts to blow it out, then suddenly stops. A hand appears in her open window. Dickon starts to climb in.
Dickon!
Heaven help me from coming through the hall and getting lost in this ghost trap. It was easier coming up the vine.
Dickon, what is it? What's happened?
Can they find the way to Colin's room?
Yes.
She puts on a robe and picks up her candle.
Take hold of my hand, Mary. If I get lost in this wuthering house, I'll show thee what a tantrum is.
They walk out. Moments later, they peek into Colin's room. He lies awake reading.
Mary.
Pushing open the door, they enter. She sets the candle down on a table.
I thought it was going to be my father.
He hasn't seen him yet. All this time, then I'm not too late.
What are you doing here this time of night? What's happened?
When I sees the father say not about the garden.
Of course I would.
I would, just the same. When I tell thee Ben's story, Ben Witherstaff's been to me.
Ben?
Tonight, and me in bed, and the wind howling, and it's Ben off the moors.
Dickon.
Ben, a man so afraid I've never seen. Afraid to tell, yet fearing to come to thee or Mary, that they might not listen. So he came to me.
What did he say?
There was the old table and the broken chair and the axe and the old oak tree. Their mother, Mary and me, we knew. We never told thee.
Dickon.
Ben was there. He told me all. It was an accident, Mary. We were wrong to suspect.
Suspect what?
'Tis of no importance. The father loved the mother like none can tell. Or so Ben says. 'Twas her garden. And every afternoon they took their tea under the oak. And none was there but old Ben tending the roses. And then, one day, the limb fell. The men carried the mother back to the house. And there she died after thee was born.
Why do you have to tell me about it?
I must, Colin. The garden. Ben stayed in the garden all that night. He can't say why. He just did. With the sun not yet up, the father came back. His eyes were like bloody ghosts from the weeping. And his mind gone from him. And an axe in his hand. The axe. He tried to chop down the tree. He tried to kill the tree that killed his mother. Chopping, chopping. And the tree stronger than the father's crippled back. He couldn't chop it down, Colin. And he fell to the ground with the axe still in the tree and the tree not dented. And he wept like a man crazy. And he cursed at Ben when Ben wouldn't finish the chopping. And then it was sun up and the father got up from the ground. And he was a man different and changed. And his eyes were like ice, yet burning. He swore how he'd lock the garden and bury the key. And if every human being laid eyes on it again, he'd see the garden destroyed. Forevermore. He'd tear out the vines, the roses, the lilacs. He'd see the trees cut down and nothing left. He'd mix salt with the earth and blight the dirt. That was what he swore.
Our garden.
It was 10 years ago. A man can change. I can't believe he'd still do it.
You don't know him.
What kind of a man is it that'd kill a growing thing? A bush of roses, a lily bulb waiting to bloom.
I can't believe it. I'm not. He could.
I said these things to Ben, and Ben said, but he loved her. And I said, what of that? Is loving somebody a reason to kill? And Ben said, how old are thee?
A tear trickles down Colin's cheek as he gazes at the velvet drape on the wall.
Mary.
She and Dickon walk over to it. Mary tugs on the cord to open the curtain and reveal the painting. Mrs. Craven's gentle face beams down on them.
My father must have loved my mother very much. Mother.
He collapses onto the bed, breaking into tears. Mary closes the drapes.
I suppose we're not old enough. There must be an awful lot we don't know. I don't want to know. I don't want to grow up.
She presses her face onto the foot of the bed, her shoulders shaking with sobs. Dickon tenderly pats her on the back. Colin sits up.
Mary, you told me a story once about a secret garden that no one but children could see. And grown-ups never came. The children were very happy. It's a long time till we're grown-ups. We're going to be happy. Nothing's ever going to happen to our garden. No one's ever going to know. My father, hide!
Grabbing the candle, Dickon blows it out. He and Mary scramble under the bed. Mr. Craven opens the door, then steps into the darkened room. Putting on a brave face, Colin stares up at him. His father approaches the bed.
You're awake. Where were you when I arrived this afternoon? I asked for you. No one knew.
I was out of doors. I came back as soon as I heard you were here.
Mrs. Medlock tells me you spent much of the summer out of doors. I'm surprised.
The house gets stuffy.
But what do? You can't run and play.
I watch the others. Mary Lennox and the neighbor boy.
Where do you go?
Nowhere, Father. Just out of doors.
I'm taking you to Italy for the winter.
To Italy?
Yes, you and I. I've been a wretched father. I shall try to do better. They'll not come back to England for a long, long time.
I don't want... I mean, who's to look after the house? And...
I'm selling the house. I brought a gentleman up from London with me. If he likes the house, he'll buy it. I shall know in the morning.
Sell a house? The gardens, everything?
Of course, why not?
He gazes keenly at his son.
You look at me so strangely. What's the matter, Colin?
I don't want you to sell it.
This is absurd. You've always hated it. Why do you want me to keep it now?
You can't sell it.
Oh, stop this nonsense. I'm trying to help you.
I won't leave it. I won't. Oh,
Colin, I...
I die. You can't sell it. You can't.
Stop it.
Dropping down on the bed, Craven rests his hand on Colin's shoulder. Colin shirks him away.
Oh, Colin, my son. We'll go away. We'll rid ourselves of this place and we'll never come back. I've shared my curse with you and I can no more cure your poor body than you can cure my mind. But I swear to you, I swear before God we'll be happy together. While there's still time. I owe you everything a father can owe a son.
He rises and starts to walk out. Colin watches him, tears shining in his eyes.
We'll be very happy, Papa.
Thank you. We'll leave for Italy in a few days.
He walks out. Mary and Dickon come out from under the bed. They turn to Colin with worried glances. Daytime. Craven stands on a balcony with a balding, gray, mustached man. They gaze out at the estate.
But I couldn't help wondering while I was poking about what stories these old country houses could tell. Century after century, generation after generation, what tragedies, what comedies they've seen.
Would you say we've poked about sufficiently?
Forgive me. I'm a man with a great deal of money and no background whatsoever. So that makes me a romantic. Yes, I think I've poked about sufficiently.
Mm. Shall we go in?
Thank you. I'll give you my check. Our lawyers in town will arrange the balance and the transfer. Oh, thank you. It's understood, however, that the check will be binding.
It's understood.
If you had children, you wouldn't want to part with those gardens.
I have a son. He's crippled. He can't walk.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I'll take the check.
What about the gardener's locked up?
You may do with it whatever you like.
I hardly dared to ask, but I hoped you might have an outside ghost or something. You're a man of old family. You lock up your garden just to protect your valuable plants. I'm a businessman, and I want a secret garden and ghosts.
If you actually expect valuable plants, you'll be disappointed. The garden's been locked for 10 years. No one's been in it in that time. It's inhabited in all probability by weeds.
I beg your pardon. Why, it's as beautifully kept a garden as I've ever seen.
Huh? You saw it?
Of course. There was a ladder. I climbed the ladder.
You're lying.
I don't know what's the matter with you, Mr. Craven, but it's your garden. And I tell you it's magnificent.
I tell you nobody's been in it for 10 years.
He scowls at Mr. Bromley.
Nobody's been in it for 10 years.
Craven searches his face for a moment, then jerks a cord against the wall. Mr. Pitcher comes in.
Ben Weatherstaff.
Sir?
Give me Ben Weatherstaff.
He's somewhere in the ground, sir. Yes,
oh,
sir.
Never mind, that's all.
He turns toward the portrait of his wife posing in the garden, then gazes back at Bromley with a cold, hard expression.
I'm selling the house, Mr. Bromley, to escape, if possible, the temptation of madness. It would seem that the gods have arranged for me one last chance. I've resisted as long as I can.
Throwing on a cape, he grabs his walking stick and marches out. He strides down the staircase and heads out. minutes later, he approaches the secret garden. Weatherstaff blocks his way.
Heavens, get away. We must not go in there.
Get away or I'll kill you.
He shoves the gardener aside and makes his way through the vines. The raven frantically flies from one bush to another.
The raven! Maybe it's Ben. Lock the gate!
As Craven bursts into the garden, the scene changes to color. He turns to glare at Mary.
You.
Please, please, Mr. Craven, we were just leaving
it. Get away from me!
Don't do it again! Please! Please, Mr. Craven!
Colin! Colin!
Colin!
Father!
The boy sits in his wheelchair beneath the oak tree that killed his mother. He gets to his feet.
It's our garden. Please. Please don't hurt our garden.
Taking slow steps, he starts to walk toward his father. Craven stares awestruck. Colin, suddenly realizing what he's doing, looks down at his feet in surprise. Craven locks onto his son's gaze, urging him on with his eyes. Colin carefully takes another step, then another. Inching his way from his wheelchair toward his father, he breaks into a wide smile. His feet stumble slightly, but he continues to walk. As he passes the rosebush, he leans toward Mr. Craven.
Papa!
Colin collapses into his father's arms. Mary and Dickon come over.
You should have come sooner. You should have seen the lilacs.
I may see them next year, sir. They'll be better by far.
Next year?
Colin will be helping us prune them.
Thou may help us, too.
She hands Craven the key. He draws her close. Bromley, smiling in the garden doorway, rips his check in two. The raven perches on Dickon's shoulder as Craven embraces his son. Fade to black.